Hi, everybody. Mallory here, and welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. I asked everyone online over the last few weeks what you would be interested in hearing about on this show, and I have some fun, quick stories for you today based on what you said, and also one longer episode focused on Robben Island in South Africa. Before we get to Robben Island, let me tell you guys a little bit about some of the other topics we're going to discuss later, or a couple quick stories based on the things that you brought up. Some people wanted to hear about aliens, and I do have to tell you that unfortunately I myself am not much of an expert on aliens. However, my good friend Candace Keita, who worked with me for years with Benchwarmer Trading Cards, she's an incredible actress. She's been in the industry for a very long time. I have so much respect for her. She is pretty much an expert on the topic of aliens. She went down this rabbit hole and researched so much about them. So I am going to have her on sometime relatively soon so we can talk about aliens together. So stay tuned for that. I'll let you guys know a date once I have one for when Candace is going to appear. As far as my own stories with aliens, I don't have too many, but when I do have my podcast with Candace, I'll go into a little more about what I learned about aliens at the Spiritual Center, the Monroe Institute. I was taking a consciousness class and got to speak with someone who used to work for the government who had his own run-in with the Men in Black, so we'll talk about that. And there's also a program at the Monroe Institute that teaches you to go so deep into meditation, you may actually be able to reach out into the solar system and beyond. And supposedly there's a lot there. So that's going to be really interesting. And I'm going to take that in March. So as soon as I have the information on that too, and I participate in March in that program, I will do a podcast for you guys, maybe even from the Monroe Institute Center, talking about that program. A lot of people were asking about ghosts and abandoned places, and I am actually going to cover a whole episode, I'm sure more than an episode, but at least one episode, with my friend Elizabeth Saint, who is a pro paranormal investigator. Elizabeth has been on many paranormal TV shows, such as Ghosts of Shepherdston, Paranormal Lockdown, and she was wonderful enough to guest on Weird World Adventures with me. She was a guest host for several episodes, and in one of them, we actually went to Asheville, North Carolina, which is supposed to be one of the most haunted places in America. And we had some wild experiences, and I don't want to ruin that yet either, because I want her to be on with me. She's going to come on sometime early next year to tell you guys more details about what happened there. So I have a lot of fun stories in the future to cover all the topics you guys want to hear about. But today, like I mentioned, I have one quick story. When you guys asked what the strangest thing was that ever happened to me, a couple of people actually reached out and asked that. I had to think about it, and I went to my husband, Damien, and I was like, Damien, what is the strangest thing that's ever happened to me? And he helped jog my memory. I have a really fun story for you guys. So when I was in college, near the end of my college, I was in my early 20s. I was all about Eva Perón. I actually studied and wrote a research paper on her. I read all her books, her autobiography. I was on this kick of learning everything I could about Evita. And because of that, I had left the country for the first time studying abroad in Serbia. And when I came back, I was like, I have to go to Buenos Aires. So me and my husband went to Argentina. We went to Buenos Aires. We actually stayed in Recoleta, right across from the cemetery where Evita was buried. And that was kind of a coincidence. I wanted to be near there. I didn't realize we were overlooking the cemetery from our bedroom. And the way that cemetery specifically is, it's like a city for the dead. It's huge. It's all these big, enormous, monstrous mausoleums. The families really go all out to have, I mean, it's literally a city. It's a city where each mausoleum is this giant structure, and all the family is buried there. It's definitely a wealthier cemetery in Buenos Aires, but it's also, the air of it is different because, you know, in South America, people treat death differently, and it's not so morbid. There's more of a celebratory feeling there, so it's kind of a lovely place in its own way. And there were a lot of cats, so the whole cemetery was just run by this mafia of cats. They were everywhere. You know, these old women would come in the morning and feed them. And each cat seemed to have their own little alleyway that they were responsible for, that was their turf. And so, you know, we go in every morning and see all of these Argentine cats more or less acting like the guardians of these graves at Recoleta Cemetery. And when I first went in, I was looking for Evita. And, you know, there's a map when you kind of get in. And I had a general idea of where I was going, but you get lost in Recoleta very fast. So I have an idea where I'm going, but I'm not exactly sure. And I'm just in for the adventure at this point. And so I'm going down some of the alleyways. And I'm with my husband. Like, he saw this and he still talks about it. You just can't believe that this even happened. I'm like, you know, I'm just trying to find Evita. And I kind of got exasperated at one point and was like, where are we going? I want to find Evita. And as we're getting closer to where she is buried, this cat comes out from one of the side, you know, little side alleys. And he looks me dead in the eyes like, hey, you know, like, I mean, he doesn't say anything, obviously, but he just has this air like, And he looks at me and he turns. And I'm like, I think the cat wants me to follow him. So I start following this cat down the cemetery alleyways of Recoleta, and he led me to Evita. He literally, I followed him, and I followed him for about a minute or so, and then he stopped in front of Evita, and I'm like, this cat just took me to Evita. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. And that must have been his area too, because that cat was, he stayed by Evita's tomb, her family tomb, the Duarte tomb, every day, because I would go in, because we were so close to it, you know, and walk through the cemetery like a weirdo every morning, and I would stop by and, you know, give my respects to Evita, and this cat was there. So I started bringing him tuna every day because he was always there, and, you know, hey, he helped me out. He showed me how to get to Evita. It was such a wild and interesting experience, and I mean, I really can't explain it, and he was lovely. I miss him dearly. You know, I never saw the cat again after I left Argentina, but I think about him regularly because he had to be this weird, mystical cat. I mean, I really can't explain it past that. So that was probably at least one of the strangest things that's ever happened to me. And the other really strange thing that's more on the paranormal side, I'm going to talk to you guys about later when I have Elizabeth Saint with me. But for now, I definitely think you guys would benefit from hearing about Robben Island, South Africa. So we're going to jump right into that and what Robben Island is and why I was living there and why it's so unique and kind of abandoned and weird. So let's get on it. So Robben Island, like I said, is a small island off the coast of Cape Town in South Africa. It somehow encompasses a multitude of all these wild sceneries. So what do I mean? Well, okay, on one side of the island, you sit and you feel like you're on a coast, like an island, like anything else. There's a lighthouse, there's beaches, it's beautiful. However, when you drive or walk a short distance to the other side of the island, suddenly you know without a doubt that you're in Africa. There's springbok hopping by, it looks like a Serengeti, and you get lost in this tall grass. There's coast and quarries. There's the charming lighthouse, like I said. There's a small, small old Irish village and an Irish cemetery. Of course, there's a colony of South African penguins. So there's about, I believe, close to 1,000 mating pairs. So about 2,000 currently at this time South African penguins living on the island. There's springbok, steenbok, fallow deer, gulls. And, oh, there's shipwrecks all over the island. I think there's at least a dozen shipwrecks that you can count if you actually take the time to walk the coast of it. And it's a very small island. I think we walked the entire perimeter of the island in about 4 hours one afternoon. So it is very small. I think we counted 5 major shipwrecks that we could see on our walk. And some of them are huge domineering ships, and others are poacher ships and yachts. I mean, it's just, the water is so rough out there that island just eats and collects all of these shipwrecks. Robben Island, or Seal Island in Dutch Afrikaans, which is part of the language of the area, was an incredibly special home base for me as I helped volunteer on the South African Penguin Project. If the amazing scenery didn't leave me in awe, I can honestly say the history of the island sure did. Strangely enough, Robben Island was once an Irish settlement, so there is a beautiful old Irish cemetery in the village of the island that has a large Celtic cross looming over it, just looking out over the sea. It's actually a beautiful spot. The people that buried there, I mean, there's no nicer place, I feel like, to be buried because it's so peaceful, and there's just the ocean and the gulls. It was also once a leper colony, which of course left behind a vast area of leper graves. The leper graveyard that's on display for the buses of tourists that sometimes come out is a very small fenced off section. But in reality, there are so many more graves than that spilling off across the full side of the island. So when I was working on the penguin project, we would be looking for penguin nests, and I would accidentally almost fall into an old grave because at first I thought they were just in the fenced off leper graveyard, but that's actually not true. They were all over that side of the island. So there's just a mass amount of leper graves. And if you're not paying attention, you might fall into one or trip over one. It's pretty wild. I heard from our guide when I was there, when we did a quick little touristy thing as part of my time there, that there were 2,000 leper graves on the island. The new prison was actually built over many of these graves. However, many of them were unmarked, moved, or overgrown, as we know. So apparently they built the new prison over the graves of the lepers. So that just adds to catastrophe right there. I mean, you guys have all seen poltergeists. That can't end well, right? Before I talk about the prison, however, because it's a very important piece of South African history, I'd like to discuss World War II and the buildings from World War II that are there on Robben Island. You can see when you're on Robben that the island was actually prepared to be a base during World War II. Large cannon structures, pillboxes, towers, and buildings were all set up to make a base for the war. However, they were never used, as the war never actually made it down that far to Cape Town, so the buildings and structures were quickly abandoned and taken over by time and nature. So they're pretty wild, overgrown structures there that you can kind of, you know, explore through. You got to be careful, but it's an incredible, I mean, they're basically untouched by people and just overgrown with time. Instead, years later, because it didn't wind up being a base for the war, which, I mean, it was actually a great center for it just because of the way the island is set up, where it's so hard to get to the island because of the rough water, and it's so small and well-controlled. So it became a political prison instead. And what started as a political prison in a smaller old building had the political prisoners working in the quarry to build their new, larger prison. The new prison is now available for tours, as Nelson Mandela and other very important members of the African National Party were held there. So needless to say, there is an incredibly rich history on Robben Island. Now, you'll find 4 boats scheduled daily to get tourists to the island to see the new prison building and to take a quick bus ride over to the quarry and through the village and to a great photo spot at the end of the island that overlooks Table Mountain in Cape Town. There's usually a boat at 9 a.m., 11 a.m., 1 p.m., and 3 p.m. daily, which are subject to cancellation based on the daily swell. While you don't get a good full tour of the island, I still heavily encourage you to make your own way out there to Robben Island if you're in Cape Town, because the prison tour in itself is really worth it. Our guide was actually an ex-political prisoner when we did that, and he was held in that same structure, and his stories were so humbling and inspiring. He talked about how he lived on the island now because he's a tour guide, and it was such a strange experience for him to now live on this island that he was held prisoner on. And he actually ran into one of the old guards after, you know, everything had settled down and the prison was no more. And the guards came over to him and apologized and said, you know, what we had to do to you guys was not humane. And, you know, we were following orders and we regret what we did and we're so sorry. You know, and he said it's a very small community out there. And he does see a lot of those people, and a lot of people that work the museum and live on the island, you know, were somehow related to that, you know, prison in some way, whether or not they were prisoners or they were guards there, because it is a very small island and a small community. And perhaps the biggest benefit of being considered a resident in my brief time on the island was I got to see the areas of the island closed off to the general public. And it is truly a beautiful, beautiful landscape. The lighthouse was amazing. It's a picturesque site that most people don't get to see up close. And it's this gorgeous, gorgeous old lighthouse building that when you climb to the top, you get this incredible view of the entire island and of Cape Town and Table Mountain as well. We were lucky enough to get up there, and we were so excited about it. Honestly, I was on the island, like I said, for 2 to 3 weeks, and the entire time we're telling the lead scientist, we want to go to the lighthouse, please, please. And he's like, I know the guy, we'll set it up. And we finally did right at the end, and it was worth it. And with the closure of the only store and the school a few years ago, the island is only really inhabited now, like I said, by those who work for the Robben Island Museum tours and the scientists who come out to research the wildlife on the island. So I have to say I'm really humbled and blessed about getting to stay on Robben Island. It's such an incredible opportunity. And like I said, we got to see parts of the island that no one ever really saw. The lighthouse, the airport. There's a tiny landing strip. It's not an airport. It's a landing strip for helicopters sometimes when they have to rush sea life in and out. So we would drive through there and do these game drives. I got to see the Serengeti-like side of the island that no one gets to see. And, of course, get up close and personal with those penguins. I love penguins so, 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 so much. So with that segue, I'm going to tell you guys a little bit about why I was on Robben Island. And then, you know, we'll talk about some of the more abandoned structures for it afterwards. And I'll tell you about a couple little weird paranormal experiences I may have had there. You know, they're not anything crazy, but when the island is that old and has a history of being an Irish colony and then a leper colony and all of those people died and then a prison, you know, there's going to be a lot of energy stuck there, a lot of imprints left over throughout time. And I mean, it was such an incredible place. So, you know, there's got to be some kind of energy there. But anyway, before I talk about that, I would like to tell you that scientists can get a bad rep. While their stereotype is that of someone who is unathletic, I actually find that field work is quite difficult and completely disproves that theory. While conducting field work, you're usually going in and out of difficult terrain, climbing, crawling, and handling wild animals, something that most people are incapable of. But field scientists, at least, are pretty badass. I mean, I spent 2 weeks on Robben Island watching a penguin biologist hop into bushes and more or less wrestle with penguins. Anyway, this leads me to my experience on the South African Penguin Project. I found myself traveling so much for work recently that when I travel for myself, I prefer to volunteer on scientific expeditions, and I think it's a great way to give back while also being able to learn a new skill at the same time. And my first adventure in this taught me how to map archaeological trenches while on an expedition in Angkor in Cambodia. We were actually in Battambang, which is about an hour out from Angkor Wat, and this time, I found myself in a wildly different setting. I was in South Africa, like I said, clearly, on Robben Island, tagging penguins. I already told you guys how incredibly interesting Robben Island actually is. But why was I on Robben Island for this penguin project? The penguin project is partially to try to understand why the South African penguin population is rapidly declining, and also to try to help monitor and hopefully increase the penguins that are living on the island. It's part of a larger project as well, where scientists, along with the South African government, are trying to set aside a safer place for penguins to colonize and somehow nudge them into the best habitats for them to thrive in. Because unfortunately, the population of the South African penguin is declining, and we're trying to do what we can to save their future. After years of research, it seems the penguin decline has come from the decrease in anchovies and sardines in the area thanks to, you guessed it, human fishing. Specifically, the sardine shortage really hurt the penguin population, as they have found their primary source of food very scarce. That, mixed with global warming causing the waters to shift slightly, has moved the penguins' food source and a lot of the penguins off of Robben Island to different areas that may not be as safe for them. After settling into our research house, our first full day on the island had us monitoring the penguin nest in certain marked zones, checking the status of the nest and the penguins and chicks within them. While recording that data, we would check to see if the penguins were, in fact, tagged, as some had been in previous years. Honestly, my favorite thing to do at nest rounds was to use the transponder stick, which, by the way, just looks like this giant lightsaber. It's amazing. And you wave it over the penguins to see if they've been tagged. You simply wave it near their left leg, and if the penguin is tagged, the transponder will tell you the number of the tag for you to keep track of. Naturally, this tells you which penguins are nesting and where, so you can monitor their breeding and nesting habits, which we would do weekly. The penguins go out in the morning to go fish and go about their business, and they generally come back in the evening. There are set routes many penguins take around the island to and from the nests, which are referred to as penguin highways. So our first evening in the island had us walking down, around, and near the penguin highways and beaches to count to see if any juvenile penguins were molting. I have to tell you, these penguin highways are so wild. You see all these sandy little paths with all these penguin footprints in them, and it's really adorable. And if you sit out quietly at night, because our research house was kind of right by the coast at a penguin highway, you can just see these penguins walking by, either going out to sea or coming back. So our first evening on the island had us walking down, around, and near penguin highways and beaches to count to see if any juveniles were molting. The second day had us checking the artificial nests and that past scientists had laid out across the island for penguins to prospectively nest in. However, while one or two were occasionally used, with so few penguins on the island, most are nesting underneath of large bushes and trees, digging their homes underneath the bramble. What I found most interesting was that while some penguins can be aggressive, especially when you have to take a stick and lift them up to check if they have eggs under them or poke them with the transponder, many of the penguins in the Earthwatch program are actually pretty used to this. So they just let you do it, knowing that if you're going to lift me up, all right, you're going to be on your way. They're pretty chill. One way or the other, though, if you do get too close to the babies, they will move their head left and right slowly as a way to threaten you, like, I'm big, I'm going to get you. Though most don't move more than that. A few aggressive birds would bite at the transponder sticks, and we were told stories of one or two who used to chase the scientists away from them and their nests. But all in all, while they are defensive of their nest, penguins are pretty mostly accommodating. They're pretty incredible. They want to get out of your way. They don't really want much to do with you, and if you're in their territory, they'll kind of tell you, hey, this is mine. But it doesn't move much past that unless you're reaching in to grab their babies like we had to when we had to weigh them. In the afternoon on the second day, prior to checking out more nests, GPS devices were put on some penguins to see where they were going to get their food. You see, after the mom penguin lays her eggs, the father takes the initial shift, which lasts for about 3 days, not much longer than a normal day-to-night shift with their babies. And the mother uses this time to build back up her strength and feed. After that time, she comes back to the father and they alternate laying on the eggs one day and then later the babies as they develop. So they actually take turns laying on the babies and they have this nice partnership, which I find lovely. That's something I love about penguins. I mean, they literally take turns like a day at a time caring for the babies. Penguin babies are labeled P0 to P4 to notate their sizes and development, with P0 being newborn babies and P4s being almost fully fledged and able to go out to sea. Ideally, penguins will stay with their chicks until they're quite large, with the mother and father alternating going out to sea daily and bringing back food for the family. However, if food conditions are poor, parents will fledge or leave their babies sooner rather than later. Right now on Robben Island, there are many fat chicks in the nest with their parents, which leads us to believe that the food supply is doing well down here, which is great, which is due in part to the anti-anchovy fishing law, which was put in place by the government to help save the penguins. It does alternate every 3 years with a neighboring island, and since right now anchovy fishing is not allowed near Robben Island, the penguins seem to be doing better. They are currently researching to see if fishing is having a detriment on the penguin population, which we have theorized it probably is at this point. Anyway, the GPS is put on the particular penguin one day and retrieved 2 days later, as that will be the next day that penguin should be back on its nest due to the alternating trips with their partner. Naturally, a lot of information can be gathered from those devices, including where penguins are getting their food from. And sometimes we even attach cameras on them to get photos of the process as well. We actually, the girl getting the pictures was lovely. We became very good friends, and she got some really fun penguin selfies, you guys, that I will have to pull up and show you later. The third and fourth days of our adventures on Robben Island had us weighing and measuring baby penguins. Any P0, P1, and small P2s are not bothered by scientists because they're too young. But we looked for and weighed many fat P2s and then the P3s and P4s across different sides of the island. We used this tool to measure their heads and to weigh them as well and potentially get poop samples from them. And baby penguins almost always poop when you lift them up, by the way. So poo samples were, in fact, relatively easy to get. We just had to scrape them off of our clothes most of the time. Because that's the second, if you're not ready, the second you pick up that baby, it's going to poop on you. On the baby weighing days, we had poo clothes that we would wear regularly that we just always switched into because we just knew we were going to be covered in poo. And it was an adventure. So, yeah, I was pooed on by a lot of baby penguins. But you know what? They're so adorable and wonderful that it was okay. On the second day of weighing chicks, we also put transponder tags in any of the baby penguins we caught. So additional measurements and feather samples were gathered for that as well. Getting up close and personal with the chicks really was a highlight of this expedition for me. And of course, the team takes extreme care to ensure all the time spent holding the babies is as minimal as possible. Obviously, we're there to help the penguins. So we want to, you know, be as respectful to their natural environment and to them, obviously, as we can be. There were times when I had to hold and measure one chick while also holding its sibling, the second chick. And when that comes up, you can actually turn them around and brood them. So they will, in fact, burrow under you in between your legs while you squat on your knees. This position makes them feel safer. It's just part of their instincts because, you know, their mom is going to be and their dad also are going to be sitting on them. So, you know, when they first tell you, oh, yeah, just let the penguin go under you, you're like, I don't want its beak going anywhere near down there. But apparently, you know, that they just hide. They're not going to bite. They're not going to because they will get very aggressive when you are picking them up. Obviously, they don't want to be handled. So they'll start nipping and biting at you. But if you just sit on them, then they're fine. By the end of the first day and a half of this, I was honestly a pro at climbing into penguin nest, going up and down all around through the bramble, grabbing chicks and distracting the mother or father if they were around to weigh the babies. When releasing them back into their nest, they usually instinctively run back towards their parents, though there are times we need to block another exit in the nest just in case. So many times as penguins have the instinct to peck at anyone as it enters their nest, whether or not it is a threat. Which especially makes sense in Africa where they have mongoose predators or worse on the mainland, they will peck at their babies for a second when they come back into the nest before realizing that it's actually their baby. So we would sometimes shield the baby from the parent for a second when re-releasing them if they were small. And of course, if it's a larger chick, it's used to the pecking and can handle it. The importance of weighing the chicks is to see where they stand health-wise on the average weight chart cycle compared to other chicks of their age. So if they are deemed too skinny and fall under the curve, they likely won't make it in the wild, so they're sent off to a center to ensure they grow big and strong before they're re-released. Luckily, at this time, most of the chicks on Robben Island are actually pretty healthy, hopefully due to the fact that the anchovy fishing had been banned for that time. Handling the babies ensured that we came back in adorable shedded down feathers, i.e. fluff, and a lot of poop. So we made special wash loads, like I said, for penguin laundry on the days we handled the babies. It was worth it, though, for sure. And of course, everyone took extra special care not only to bother a nest only once within the week, if we could help it, but also not to ever bother away the same birds unless it was to retrieve the GPS devices from them. We also conducted a couple of evening game counts of springbok, steenbok, and fallow deer, which was a lot of fun. We would drive around in the back of our team truck across the island, through the penguin colony side, and out through the more Serengeti-like scenery on the other side of the island to count the number of the different deer that could be found. Something that's wild to me is that these deer, like Robben Island is so interesting because there's all of these tortoises, penguins, and then all this, the deer, like I said, the springbok, steenbok, and fallow deer, and none of them have any predators. I mean, there's no predators on the island. Even the giant mole snakes that we would find are not actually very, they're usually very aggressive snakes, but on Robben, because they didn't have predators, they were not aggressive at all. They would just go right by you. and you know, orb weaver spiders that were not poisonous. So there's no real threats on the island itself, aside from the poachers that sometimes try to come up to get the animals. But there's no natural, you know, predators. So these springbok and steenbok would sometimes just go into these old World War II buildings that were abandoned and die. You know, they would, wherever they would die on the island, their bones and bodies would pretty much stay intact and not get messed with because there's no predators to really eat them. So you would just find these full skeletons of these deceased animals, you know, periodically out in the wild. And I literally found a giant springbok body in the old abandoned building, and it was just spread across an old toilet. So it was kind of eerie and wild to just find these full bones of these deceased animals pretty much anywhere. I mean, anywhere that you could go in old buildings, on the Serengeti. It was pretty interesting. Our research house, where we all stayed together, was inadvertently surrounded by the breeding ground of the seagulls this year. So there was a lot of gulls screaming all around our house all day, every hour, all night. After a few days, surprisingly, you can somehow tune out gull noises. I learned that. Though an occasional gull screaming at your window at 2 a.m. would wake you up in a jolt, and that happened to me quite often. Me and my friend that was working on the project, we would compare with our smartwatches when we were woken up in the middle of the night, and it was always likely by the same gull screaming. With the swarm of seagulls circling around the base house, it was no surprise to find that one of the gulls happened to run into our house once, and that was an adventure. We were all sitting at the table getting ready for lunch, and then a gull just goes flying by, and then two people are following it going, "Oh my God, get it out!" So yeah, it was a real adventure. Fieldwork is always something I cherish, and as you get to work very closely with a great and knowledgeable team of wonderful people, and you get to handle and help try to preserve and save incredible species of animals, it's always unique, it's always exciting, and it's always informative. And this time we all lived as a family unit for 2 weeks, so we all chipped in to make dinner and clean up each day and got to really know each other and had a lot of fun outside of the hard work. We learned that our group really liked the juice and Chockets, which are really delicious weedy-flavored chocolate biscuits, by the way, and tomatoes. It was a remarkable experience that I will always be grateful for. And after this incredible experience, I realized how much I really do love penguins. I hope to be able to work with this team again, as well as South African penguins in the future. I am planning to go down into Patagonia next year, which will be wonderful to work with the Magellanic penguins down there. I'm going to end this with some more of the eerie facts about Robben Island that people don't really get to see if they're not living on the island. So like I said, I think they told me there's about 30 people still living on the island. So there's a lot of abandoned buildings. So you're basically walking through a ghost town when you're walking through the old Irish area. There is still a community pool there. That was the only thing I saw that even functioned. There was an old store that was just boarded up and closed. There was an old school that used to be there that's just boarded up and no longer used. There is the old lighthouse, which does, you know, get used by the lighthouse keeper every day when he has to, of course, turn it on. But aside from that, you know, it's just kind of sitting there with no one gets to see it. And there's the Irish cemetery, which, like I said, is just abandoned. It looked like it partially got set up to be a tourist thing at one point because there's little turnstiles in it and the entrance. And then they just gave up on that idea. So the island is 90% abandoned, and then there's the prison buildings. And, you know, like I said, they built the new prison with stones from the quarry that the prisoners themselves from the old prison had to build and get and, you know, dig up. And they themselves built the new prison, which was built over a leper graveyard, which is just wild. I mean, the history there and the energy, it's very surreal. And when you think about the fact that the African National Party had some secret delegations and meetings with Nelson Mandela in the quarry, in the little tiny part they carved out for the restroom. I mean, it's wild the things that happened there and the history that took place on Robben Island. And obviously everyone knows that Nelson Mandela was held there for many years. And we stayed in this facility-like building that to me looked like it was probably part of the old prison or part of that old administrative, you know, structure, the administrative buildings for the prison that was built around that time. And my room overlooked the water. So, you know, I had this gigantic window with no curtains because we just didn't expect to have this gigantic window and we weren't prepared, that overlooks the sea, which is lovely. But it's also really eerie at nighttime when I'm trying to go to sleep and there's just this wide open window looking out at the water, because there were a few crashed poacher boats. So the entire time I'm like, oh my gosh, what if the poachers come today and they just arrive and look right in my window? I'm the first thing that's here on the island. And for some reason, I just had this weird fear that never went away, that I was going to wake up and see someone staring in that window. And to be honest, like, I can be paranoid. I'm not very afraid of paranormal stuff. That was kind of unlike me. So I'm wondering if there's some interesting story there that I was picking up on, something related to someone looking in the window there, because I just kept thinking about it and kept being paranoid about it. I also had several bouts of sleep paralysis while I was there. That's relatively normal for me. I've had regular sleep paralysis ever since I was, I think, 11, 12 years old. It's been very regular. I've had it hundreds of times, and it resurfaces whenever I get off of my natural circadian rhythm. So being over, you know, 10 hours, I think I was 10 hours off of my regular time zone, that kind of checks out that I would have sleep paralysis. But it was still eerie to think about. I was so paranoid about someone looking into this window, and I would like hide myself under the covers every night because it bothered me so much. And then I'd wake up with sleep paralysis being so focused on that particular window. So, you know, it's not really something I can research into, like it's building number like A23. Like, that's not actually what the building was, but it's the way that it's marked like that, that it would be hard for me to have to figure out why that would be, but it would be interesting to see. So if you like abandoned places with unbelievable history that are likely pretty haunted, but it's, you know, it's such a natural elemental feeling environment that it's really not spooky in its own way, then Robben Island is the place for you. So I hope you guys enjoyed my spiel about Robben Island. It was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had. It is definitely one of the strangest places I've ever visited in the world, because it's effectively just a abandoned society with very few people living there to run tours through the old prison and the new prison that held Nelson Mandela. And aside from that, it's pretty much an African wasteland with old World War II buildings, the old prison, the old lighthouse, the old Irish cemetery and settlement, and the old leper cemetery, and then tons and tons and tons of penguins. So I would definitely recommend going to Robben Island. You can set up tours when you go to South Africa, when you go to Cape Town. Like I said, they're not going to be as intricate. You're not going to get to see the full island like you would if you're living there, but it is still cool to step foot there and get to soak in that weird history and abandonment. And I highly, highly, highly recommend it. Anyway, that's all for today, you guys. Like I said, I'm hoping to have Elizabeth Saint come on and talk about paranormal and ghosts with us very soon. Same thing with Candace Keita to talk about aliens. And hit me up on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. I'm either at Mallory Mackey, MalorieMackey, or at Weird World Adventures. Across the board, you can find me both names, both pretty much all social platforms. And let me know what you want to hear about. And until next time, I will see you guys then, and stay weird.